right. Hello, everyone. My name is Kevin Thorpe, Chief Economist for Cushman & Wakefield, and welcome to the podcast. As you may know, we recently launched a new thought leadership series that focuses on the future of office. It's a four-part series. In part one, we modeled the cyclical and structural impacts of the COVID-19 recession on the globe's office sector, and we produced forecasts out to 2030. That report can be found on our website. And today, we're here to discuss part two of our series, which examines the history of office, explores why businesses even bothered with office space in the first place, and do those same reasons apply to today's economy, and what value will office have in the future in helping businesses and employees perform. And so I'm joined today by two of the principal authors of this study. First, Chris Leinberger, who is a professor at George Washington University and is also the managing director at Places Platform, which is a real estate big data startup company. And also joining us is David Smith, who is Cushman & Wakefield's global head of occupier research. David has authored numerous studies throughout his career, many of which focus on the office sector and workplace strategies. So thank you both for joining. And David, let me start with you. If you could just maybe give us a quick overview of the study, what we did and why we did it.
Thanks, Kevin. Well, as you noted, we wanted to have a partner, a third-party partner. So we've worked with Chris and his colleague, Michael Rodriguez, to do a deep and broad review of the academic and industry research on the history of the office and the purpose of the office. And that's why we've referred to this report as the purpose of place. And in doing this, we're trying to answer a few questions. Why does the office exist in the first place? What does it offer? What are the benefits compared to remote work? And then also vice versa, what might be better for business outcomes from remote or distributed workforces? And how important are each of those, the remote work, the in-person work in the office, to things such as productivity, innovation, and employee satisfaction? And how is that impacted by where people work day in and day out?
Right, right. And we'll just emphasize that the study focuses on the post-COVID world. So maybe think of it as a sort of 2022 and beyond. And so, Chris, want to kind of go to you now. Again, thanks for joining. After examining the history of office, in the study, we point to really four main reasons why organizations utilized office space in the first place. And so my question to you is, what are those, kind of run us through those four main reasons, and will those reasons still be relevant in the post-COVID world?
So the history of office, of a purpose-built office, has only been around for 200-300 years, and it really is a factor of the Industrial Revolution. And the number one reason is for management to have a centralized command and control place. So that was very important in the industrial age, a little less important now. So in the knowledge economy, which is what's driving the economy right now, it is less important, but still exists. Number two is the capital requirements that are unique to a office. When we had big computers and all sorts of very expensive support facilities, that, again, in the industrial age, that was very important. Today, that is, again, in the knowledge economy, less important. We all have laptops. We have broadband at home. So it's less important. The third reason is to create productive environments for office workers. That's as important in the knowledge economy as it was in the industrial world. And in fact, possibly even more important. And then finally, also very important in the knowledge economy, are the social needs of employees, and to reinforce the culture of the organization, give people a chance to learn from their mentors and give them FaceTime, quite honestly. So that's even more important in the knowledge economy than in the past.
Yeah. And it's interesting. You mentioned the knowledge economy, and it's also one of the reasons why office exists. And we do touch on that in the study as well. The fact that the global economy has been undergoing this structural transformation, shifting to a knowledge-based professional services-oriented economy. That's been going on for decades. And so basically, office using employment continues to gain share relative to other sectors. And so it's largely assumed that the world will continue to create office jobs when we come out of the other side of this pandemic. And so if those four reasons Chris just mentioned hold true, then there, you know, clearly would continue to be demand for space. That's a point that's also made in the study. David, I want to go to you. So there's a lot of mixed messages right now, specifically about worker productivity. So some say they're more productive working from home. Some say they're less productive. Productivity, of course, is a very difficult thing to measure for certain professions. I can say, as an economist, I actually have no idea if I'm ever productive. But I'm curious, on our study itself, what does it conclude about worker productivity?
Well, the conclusion, Kevin, is just that, that the data is mixed and it really does depend. So the first thing I would say is that business productivity is absolutely benefited from having the ability to move people to remote work as needed to ensure business continuity. And we've seen that firsthand during this pandemic, that organizations have in large been able to move from most of their people being in the office to most of their people not being in the office during COVID restrictions. But under normal times, as we look past the pandemic, the data really shows that some productivity does actually increase when workers are given the option to work from home, at least some of the time, or work remotely at a second or third location. And some of those benefits probably seem somewhat obvious. So one is just reduction or elimination of a commute, which adds a little bit more time to a worker's day. There is less disruption, people not just walking by or tapping you on the shoulder. You lose some things on the social side with that, but you certainly gain the ability to focus a little bit more. And so those are all ways in which productivity can be increased when people are given the access to remote work. But it really is, as you noted, highly dependent on the type of work. So what industry, what occupation, and on any given day, what that person's job function or functions are going to be. So many of the roles that require innovation and interaction that benefit from being in person by sharing both formal and informal conversations, those are challenged by remote work. One study in particular that I'll just pull out for looking at some European firms that are focused on product development saw that performance and innovation speed were actually improved by workers working remotely, but all those firms continued to have face-to-face contact. And so really integrating face-to-face with remote work is likely the best solution for a lot of occupiers.
Yeah, it makes sense. And I think a lot of sort of the central point, this comes up in the study as well, and I've heard you both talk about it in sort of a different way, that it's just not a binary decision, right? This office versus remote working. It's not everyone goes into the office all the time or everyone works from home all of the time. The optimal model probably for the majority of businesses is that it's a mix, right? But the math on this does support a greater adoption of the work from home model, right? I think that's also true. People spend on average 2 hours a day commuting back and forth to work, and that's arguably 2 hours of lost productivity, right? So that's sort of undeniable. But I think our sort of point is that certain job functions are performed better in the office, right? Brainstorming and collaboration and face-to-face trust building. And those things can't be replicated at home, or at least can't be replicated in the same way at home, right? And I think that's kind of a point that's made throughout the paper. David, a quick follow-up with you. So with this work from home experience, this forced experience that we all kind of find ourselves in, and again, I would emphasize it's arguably been a success, right? People are getting work done. So given that, so businesses today are sort of trying to figure out how often employees should be required to come back to the office. And is there any sort of rule of thumb that's forming on that?
Yeah, so I think the key point to make is that giving employees some level of choice where they can work on any given day is absolutely a net positive. It builds trust. It gives them opportunities to have fresh eyes or a new place to work. But the research really does show that in most cases, people working remotely every day is often a net negative. So one meta-analysis that was looked at showed that across 46 academic studies that the inflection point was somewhere around a half a week. So 2.5 days in the office versus 2.5 days outside of the office. And once you got beyond that inflection point, there you would see harms in the employee experience, weakening in relationships between colleagues, which is one of the things that some of our Cushman and Wakefield experience per square foot data from our total workplace and consulting teams also corroborates. And then another study from Gallup that was done just before COVID indicated essentially the same thing, which is people who didn't work remotely at all had the lowest level of engagement, but tied with them were people who worked the most outside of the office, so 80% or more. So some sort of sweet spot exists for most people somewhere between 1 day and 4 days a week outside of the office. And the final answer is really going to be a customized plan for each occupier, because the preferences and the benefits do differ person to person, certainly by geography, by demographics or generations, one key area, by occupation and job functions, and then just psychographics and how people like to work and where they want to be on any given day.
I think it's important to mention, though, that this hybrid model needs to be managed. That 2.5 day per week sweet spot, if that's the sweet spot, which we're going to find out in the second phase of this work, that it can't be spontaneous like it used to be and just hope that people show up. The team members that you need to work with just show up spontaneously. It needs to be managed. And I think it's important that getting beyond that 2.5 days per week, you begin to lose productivity. You begin to lose the socialization that you're trying to achieve.
Yeah. Chris, I want to stay with you. And this is going to be sort of a quick hitters if we can, because this study, we, you know, we did some, we focused on productivity, but we also compare office to remote working in a few other key areas. And so what I'd like to do is just run down quickly the key areas that we examined. And if you could, you know, from your perspective, you also have been a developer, real estate developer in your career. So curious to hear your sort of what you found as the highlight, the key finding in each one of these key areas. Okay. Okay. So let me start with innovation and creativity. What was the headline from your perspective?
The headline is that basically the knowledge economy is being driven by a theory called agglomeration theory. This is how Paul Krugman won his Nobel Prize. And that the innovation, the creativity happens when you have this agglomeration taking place, and 1 and 1 equals 3. This is why walkable urban places exist. This is why offices within walkable urban places do best there, because the possibility of this spontaneous creativity taking place, because you don't know when it's going to happen, but you got to be there for it to happen. So agglomeration is the answer.
Mm-hmm. Okay, number two, company culture and branding. What was the headline?
That is, you need FaceTime, and especially for young people, that to build the culture, you need FaceTime with senior management. They, in turn, the senior management, need to mentor so as to both train and imbue the person, immerse the person in the culture. The branding is an interesting question, because the office space becomes a major factor in the branding of the company. And particularly walkable urban office space becomes important for that, that is really consistent with the knowledge economy, which again is driving this economy right now.
Mm-hmm. And last one, again, comparing office to remote working on the category of employee satisfaction and retention. What was the key finding?
Well, many of the listeners may have heard about the three places. First is home. The third place is a public place, particularly a walkable urban coffee shop, restaurant, a place of public gathering. Obviously, these places have been very hurt during the pandemic, but this is going to pass. The second place is your workplace. And this is where a lot of employee satisfaction comes from, a lot of retention comes from, building social bonds outside of your neighborhood, outside of the third place, some of the most important social bonds of a person's life comes from the second place.
So, David, I want to sort of pick up on a point Chris just made that, you know, a lot of this comes down to the job function itself in terms of where you're more productive, where you're more successful. But it's also more nuanced than that. And I think we're learning more on the demographic specifically. What are we learning there in terms of the demographic cohorts through this work from home experience? Are there any groups that are struggling with remote working more than others or doing better than others?
Yeah, so I think if you had surmised before this all happened what the impact would be, people would have expected that young workers would have been perfectly comfortable working from home and working remotely, more comfortable with technology and so forth. But the Cushman & Wakefield's experience per square foot at home work actually shows that millennial and Gen Z workers are struggling at a greater rate with work from home challenges. So 70%, over two thirds of them are struggling with that. In particular, the youngest workers in an organization, so Gen Z, under 25 year olds, are less likely than other workers to feel connected to either their colleagues or the company culture. They're less likely to indicate they feel like they're doing their best work, and they're less likely to feel like they have a sense of fulfillment. And across all employees, we see about a third of them, just over a third, saying they don't feel like they're learning during this time. And so formal learning is still able to be done pretty easily through technology. But it's a lot of that informal mentoring and learning that's a real challenge. And that disproportionately impacts young employees who want exposure and want to learn, again, informally from older and more experienced colleagues so that they can continue to grow their careers. And that really is hampered when you're not in the same room or the same building with people on a regular basis.
Well, here's one for both of you. And this is probably the number one question. I think it's the number one question I'm hearing from clients these days on the topic of office. And it's both from investor and office users. So it's about this sort of CBDs versus suburbs. And there's a lot of reporting right now. Everyone's trying to figure this out. There's a lot of reporting that, you know, given the pandemic, this event might create this mass exodus out of CBDs, out of downtown markets, into the suburbs. And curious, we'll start with Chris. What are your thoughts on that topic?
So CBDs, of course, are walkable urban places by definition. And the three scourges of walkable urban places for centuries have been terrorism, crime, and pandemics. And so our CBDs have faced this many times before. The crime that took place in New York City and many other cities in the 80s, the terrorist attacks in 2001, now the pandemic. We've lived through this for centuries. So we're going to live through this again. However, the pandemic, there's a number of things that the pandemic are speeding up that were already taking place before the pandemic. And this move towards the urbanization of the suburbs is going to be the next big trend that made itself felt during the 2010s, that decade, that expansion. And I think the pandemic's going to speed that up. So the urbanization of the suburbs includes places like Reston Town Center outside of Washington, D.C., going to Evanston and Lake Forest north of Chicago, and Bellevue east of Seattle. These places are going to become more and more relevant. They're still offices. They're still in walkable urban locations, but it's just going to speed up. Like we saw taking baby steps in the 2010s, it's going to speed up in the post-COVID era.
Mm-hmm. And David, do you share a similar view?
I do. I think there is there was movement even pre-COVID for population growth to be a little bit stronger in the suburbs than in the CBD, which was not the case in the first half of the last decade. But population growth had continued to be positive in CBDs. We had seen office vacancy starting, the gap between CBD and suburban markets start to shrink a little bit. But we've actually seen in 2020 that vacancy rates are rising a little bit faster in the suburbs than in CBD. And that while leasing activity is down everywhere, as a proportion of total Class A leasing, in 2020, CBD is right in line where it has been the last few years at about 40% of all of that leasing. So I do think, to Chris's point, that urbanized and walkable areas everywhere, both in the CBD and in the suburbs, are going to be the long-term winners here. And I think there's a lot of opportunity in the suburbs. A lot of occupiers are going to continue to be committed to the CBD. And when we get to the other side of this pandemic, a lot of the challenges we're experiencing right now, certainly health concerns, public transportation challenges, as well as right now, CBDs don't offer the same amenities that they typically do because you can't go to the theater, you can't go out to eat as easily, or especially for indoor dining. But all of that will come back in time. And I think you'll continue to see demand for that.
Yeah.
Let me also, Kevin, mention and basically expand upon what David just said, is that the concept or the comparison of center cities versus suburbs is now pretty much obsolete. And the reason for that is the urbanization of the suburbs. So in metropolitan Washington, 50% of the walkable urban absorption of office space in particular, but also multifamily space, has been in the urbanizing suburbs. So when people divide city versus suburb, they're assuming that the walkable urban suburbs, like Reston Town Center, like Evanston, like Bellevue, are in fact drivable product, but they're not. They're walkable urban, just like the CBD. So it's an apples and oranges being blended together. So it's important to dissect the world between walkable urban office product and drivable suburban business park office product. They're two different animals, and the suburbs have both.
Yeah, so I completely agree with many of those points made. And unfortunately, we are running out of time. The only thing I would just add to that last point is if I've learned one thing in studying the property and the real estate market is that real estate's never been a one size fits all kind of thing, right? I do think there's going to be some strategies where you see more of a hub and spoke movement out into the suburbs, lighter footprint in downtown. I also think you'll see strategies of what a great opportunity to come into the city. I think the young people, the millennials and Gen Z, which dominate the workforce, and the younger generation really generally are drawn to big cities. And so I think you're going to see a lot of movement. I do think because of this event, you're going to see a lot of movement. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Really appreciate your participation today, David and Chris. It was an excellent report, excellent insight. And just to wrap this up, now that this report has laid the groundwork for some of the opportunities and challenges with balancing remote working and in-office work, the next report, which we alluded to earlier, the next phase of this report will take a deeper look into how occupiers can think about optimizing their office ecosystems to maximize productivity, innovation, employee engagement. And my favorite part of this next phase will be a focus on providing key data-driven benchmarks to help office users and investors think about sort of the optimal work-from-home office flex model going forward. And so be on the lookout for that. We'll be rolling it out later on in 2020. Thanks again to David and Chris for sharing your thoughts. It's been a pleasure. And thank you all for listening in. Stay safe, everyone.
Thanks, Kevin.
Thank you.